Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Happy Election Day. Polls open in about 40 minutes. Take your calls. Give us a call all morning, too, after you go to vote, if you're one of those who votes on Election Day at your polling place, if there's any interesting happenings. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Give us a call. Tell us which races you're most interested in, which candidates have most captivated you during this primary season, whether it's for local office or federal office, Congress, the Senate race, or of course the statewide offices that we spent a good bit of time discussing. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
And if there's any problems, you know, even if your polling place isn't open at 6 a.m., because I know sometimes they have a problem getting election judges there, so we want to hear if you have any of those problems. But yeah, today's the day, and last night, yesterday, during the day, the candidates were out, the gubernatorial GOP candidates. And look who somebody found. Somebody found Richard Ervin. He was in Peoria.
For a Republican to win in Illinois, a governor, you need Republican votes, you need independent votes, and you need Democratic crossover. I'm the only person that's going to be able to do that.
Yeah, but you're not going to win.
Also, I reject
people
the promise.
Found them.
This is the argument that Richard Ervin is making, Jesse Sullivan is making at the close, because what else do they have at this point? But I say again, they have not provided any data to support that position. And do you think they haven't provided it because they don't have the money to do the polling, or because the numbers aren't there? I gave you a little bit of indication of where a general election matchup stands between Spalding and Bailey yesterday, because I did do the polling. And it's a single-digit race between Bailey and Pritzker. The generic ballot right now, Republican candidate for governor versus Democrat candidate for governor, is single digits. Low single digits, actually. Margin of error. This environment provides opportunity. I say again, for emphasis, something that you won't have Ervin or Sullivan say, which is Pritzker is no easy out for any of these candidates. And frankly, there's no evidence that any one of them is significantly better situated than anyone else in terms of a general election matchup. There's no evidence to support that claim. And none has been presented. I'm the only one who's presented any sort of general election picture as we stand here today. There's opportunity, but Pritzker will be a tough out. Obviously, Illinois trending as it has to oblivion for the last 30 years, you don't just snap it back like that.
Right, but you need help from fellow Republicans. And Jim Edgar is not
I don't care
person.
About Jim Edgar. I don't care about Jim Edgar because you don't need help from Jim Edgar. I'm tired of listening to Jim Edgar. That's who the Chicago Press Corps wants you to listen to is Jim Edgar. That's who the Springfield. That's who they want you to listen to. That's how the Springfield Press Corps wants you to listen to. I'm not interested in listening to Jim Edgar. And by the way, neither is any Republican. The only people that are interested in listening to what Jim Edgar has to say, Mr. Tax Increase, Mr. Pension Ramp, Mr. J.B. Pritzker debate prep person in 2018 is the press corps. And I'm not interested in being another toady for the Chicago and Springfield press corps. Who cares what Jim Edgar has to say? That should be the response from any self-respecting center-right voter in this state. Go away, Jim Edgar. Go enjoy your gambling money. Go enjoy your seven-figure pension. Leave us alone. Let's focus on the future rather than trying to look to our future in the rearview mirror as we've done for so long. Jim Edgar. That's comical. The way that you win is not the standard issue pap you hear from Richard Irvin, who's just a hack trying to remember what lines to recite.
Yeah. He came out of high school.
You need some Republicans, you need some independents, you need some Democrat crossover. Wow, brilliant. It's bigger than that.
Soft Democrats, they call them.
You need, it's a completely the wrong framework. You need to stoke a revolt against the bipartisan combine ruling class in Springfield. That's what you need to do. Now, that's an easy thing to say, and it's a more difficult thing to do, and there's nuance to it. But that's what has to happen if you want a conservative reform government, and if you want Bailey, who's going to be the nominee after tonight, to win in November. If you don't, you don't. Fine. But that's the path. And by the way, it would have been the path for any of these candidates. The problem is, much like Trump in 2016, I would argue, the person you think, some think, the person some think that is the worst matchup for Pritzker is the only person who can beat Pritzker in this race, I would argue.
And that's why they propped him up.
That's why they propped who up?
Bailey. I mean, in the...
Because they think Pritzker, he's the only candidate that can beat Pritzker?
No, no. They think that he can't beat Pritzker, right. So let's prove them wrong that he can.
John in Portage Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you about an experience I had with voting. I was a poll watcher, you know, getting everybody's information, giving them the ballot, that stuff, kind of stuff, for the 45th Ward, 11th Precinct, Portage Park, Chicago. And anyhow, we had a double polling place with two precincts in one location. I also want to say that I was a poll watcher for three cycles before that.
Okay.
So I just want to see. But I noticed people going into the in the other precinct. I noticed the poll watcher, the head poll watcher over there going into the voting box and with people like that were obviously mentally impaired, you know, kind of telling them how to vote. And so anyhow, after the election was over, I called up the Illinois election people and I called up the Republican Party and I told them this, and I was never asked again to be a poll watcher.
Okay.
And now they're like begging for poll watchers. They still don't ask me to be a poll watcher. And I just don't trust the Illinois election system with anything. And that's my election day story.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Mike Plano.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm getting ready to vote here in a little bit. Out here in District 14, I'm glad you guys interviewed Mike Coolidge. I thought he did a great job, and I saw him on Fox News this morning, so I'm glad he's getting some name recognition. And I hope he beats Scott Greider. Now, I will vote for Scott if he wins in the general, but I just don't like the people that are supporting him. He was out here at my local golf course with Sue Resin and Randy Holgren, a couple establishment combine people. Plus, he gave a lesson. Less than impressive interview with you guys last week, but one last thing. Oh yeah, in the state rep race out here is David Welter, who's an incumbent Rhino, taking on Jed Davis. I'm really hoping Jed pulls off.
I'm hoping Jed Davis wins too. David Welter. David Welter should be turned out.
Yeah, he's pro Lightfoot, pro lockdown, pro bailout, number of other things, and. Yeah, and one last thing I wanted to say to you is one of the best debates I heard was between you and Pat Brady at the City Club of Chicago. You did two of them. The first one was the best because it was before the 2018 midterms, and you made a stark contrast between him and the rest of the Combine Republicans whose goal is to simply win elections and that's it, and you whose job is to not only win elections but actually advance conservative reform. And it just angers me that people like you, Steve Cortez, and others who are actually interested in reform or blocked from having any influence in the party, because people like me want more voices like you. It's hard for me to get motivated to vote in this state for Republicans.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Well, you're making
Mike.
A good
Appreciate
choice not
it.
Voting for Scott Greider, because remember, too, he's won campaign chair for Richard Ervin.
Yeah, I like
don't
Scott.
Don't forget about that.
Yeah, I like. I'm with Mike in Plano. I like Mike Coolidge in the 14th. Marvin in Burlington.
Yeah, good morning. I know I'm a Wisconsinite, and I'm just hoping that Illinois, being from Illinois and living here most of my life, I just hope they don't go backward and please go forward. And remember what this man did and all his dictates during COVID. Remember all the executive orders that that were above the law that he did. This man, the only thing he's done is buy a governorship in his whole life. That's the only thing this billionaire trust fund baby's accomplished outside
Pretty much.
Of being a tax, yeah. outside of being a tax cheat. And you know, it's really a disgrace. And this guy should be nowhere near decision making for the vast majority of people. And I think Darren Bailey's from the downstate, isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly what we need in Illinois. And I pray that we get some downstate common sense. You know, people who do something for a living and not just feed off their future or their earlier generations a money making machine. It's please, Illinois.
Thanks. We're still under emergency.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. Appreciate it.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. More frightening than a second Pritzker term as Illinois governor.
What? You're scaring me.
How about this scenario? How about a bunch of septuagenarian and octogenarian socialists walking around Evanston with nothing but their Birkenstocks on? And their droobies, you know, slapping all over the place.
What's a droopy?
A droopy booby.
Oh, pancake boobs? You call them droopy boobies?
A droopy.
I've never heard of that before. Oh, yeah, there is an alderman, Devin Reed, who's now going to be taking over the Human Services Committee in Evanston, and he wants to decriminalize a range of behaviors, but one of them is, yes, for non-breastfeeding women to show their breastises below the top of the nipple in public.
Hmm.
Mike Scott told us about this story, and he's, you know, this could happen, though. It really could. We're laughing about it, but this
making
is
the change, Alderman Reed said, could afford greater liberties to those in the trans and non-binary communities who don't necessarily fall into the cisgender male or female mold. I don't think our current ordinance is narrowly tailored, because what is so inherently sexualized about the female body that is not inherently sexualized about the male body?
Oh.
I think we just really need to get clear on what the law is. By the way, if the change would be adopted, it wouldn't just lead to polluting the beaches of Evanston with these disgusting people in their natural state.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be limited to that.
You could walk around Evanston.
Be lifted throughout the city. Yeah.
So not you can just go to Northwestern and be
not just
topless.
For the topless sunbathing. Well, sure, why not? Yeah.
Would Northwestern and enact their own rules if this passes?
Northwestern is not its own unit of government.
Okay.
So yeah, they have to comply with local and state laws, as I understand it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. The plan, I believe, is been well, it was tabled earlier this month, but it has, I guess, generating renewed debate and interest because, of course, this is the High Holy Month of Pride, and so wouldn't it be wonderful, with an eye towards the trans and non-binary communities, to let men walk around with their boobies showing,
or ladies? Well, and it's unequal standard between the two genders. So if you can walk around with your shirt off at the beach, why can't I?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But this guy's a little cray cray because there's some other things he wants. He wants people to use city parks overnight, to throw rocks at buildings and people. Let that sink in. To be in possession of burglars' tools, that it's not illegal to be in possession of those tools.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing with those burglars' tools? Nothing.
Just walking around, just getting my bicep, tricep working.
The one council member in Evanston, Eleanor Revelle, the question is, men and women are not the same with respect to the traditional understanding of what constitutes nudity. Oh, you don't say. I'm not willing to approve this until I know we've got community support for what this could mean.
Let me tell you, sister, what this means is you're going to become you'll be a nude beach. Everyone will go to Evanston for nude beach.
Be a topless beach.
Oh, but then that just morphs into taking the panties off. Come on.
I'd like, that is really something to contemplate. I'd like people to come to our beaches because they want to enjoy our beaches for the natural resource that it is, rather than coming because it's a topless beach. I don't think anybody is going to be coming to the Evanston beaches because it's a topless beach. Like, I can't wait. Unless you're, a voyeur for, voyeuristic interests. But
or a teenage boy in high school, they'll be flocking up there.
Right. Because it's going to be like a Sports Illustrated swimsuit shoot on that beach. No, I don't think so.
But that's,
it's going to be a bunch of disgusting, fat, socialist.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. I don't know if you've been to Evanston recently. That is what it's going to be.
I should familiarize myself with Evanston. Well, during the pandemic, when our beaches were closed up.
And if the bottoms come off, uh-huh. It's going to be a bunch of people walking around looking like they got Dr. J in a scissor lock. And I mean Dr. J, Virginia Squires Dr. J, not Philadelphia 76ers Dr. J.
Well, during the pandemic, everybody went to Evanston Beach, and some people still go back there because they enjoyed themselves.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't think you do either. Everybody went to Evanston Beach. What are you talking about?
For two summers, the beaches were closed, and Evanston Beach was open, so everybody...
Were you there? Yes, of course I was there.
And
what was there? What was it like?
High schoolers, a bunch of... not everybody was fat and gross, okay?
Yeah. I'm sure.
They weren't.
Yeah, I'm sure. Fine. All your hot Lakeview friends and their kids went up there for one summer and then retreated back to the city. And now it's back to being, a bunch of Bernie bros. And I'm talking about the women up there roaming around. The hell out of here. John in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. My wife and I were down in St. Martin at Orient Beach. And we figured out the people that are there are people you don't want to see there.
Of course. I mean, did you see the naked bike ride this weekend through the city of Chicago? We do that, too. Apparently, there is an ordinance, but apparently you know, these sorts of things don't get enforced. They don't get enforced for that Caligula display on the north side every year, and they don't get enforced for the naked bike ride, at least where my friend saw it. Thankfully, I didn't have to witness it, was through Old Town. I showed you a picture.
You showed me the picture. They weren't that large, those people that you showed me a picture of.
Yeah, that's what you want to see. You want to see a bunch of guys on bikes.
Where
nude?
Were the women?
With their jewels hanging around the chain. I mean, are you kidding?
I know, only in Chicago. Well, they start at Wrigley Field. It's a midnight naked ride. And then they go through Old Town.
Why?
But they're allowed to do, I don't know.
Right.
Because there's different rules for different people. And also, if you call a cop, good luck getting a cop. Especially this weekend. Constant sirens.
I'm afraid to take this call, but I'm going to take it anyway. Okay. Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Hey, Amy and Dan. Yeah. Hey, let me tell you, this naked beach is the worst idea ever. When I was 10 years old, we lived with my grand, and she was born in 1896, and she made Buford Pusser look like a kindergarten teacher. And I had to sneak in there, and when I heard her coming with her walker, I hid in the closet. And I was in there so long, I thought she might have fell asleep. So I opened the door and went to leave, and she was sitting on the side of the bed with her top off, and her boobies were hanging all the way down to her ankles. And I'm telling you, I got to have therapy to this day to get over that.
Yeah.
Well, they do hang, especially after time.
That's not counting the YMCA. Mm-hmm. That's not counting the YMCA with the guys. The old men that had their sacks hanging down at her knees.
Okay. All right. Let's. Well, that's probably not.
I got to tell you, I don't. I mean, the men's locker rooms thing, I don't understand it. I don't understand. You know, I'm too old to go diving into that. Fine. You don't have to dive anywhere. Just put something over yourself. I mean, just to have some, like, humility, you know, decency.
That generation was raised where they didn't wear swimsuits in swim class. My dad went to Lane Tech, and they swam naked. They made them swim naked.
Yeah, I understand. I don't think that was
all boys school.
I don't think that was a great policy, but no. Regardless.
Well, thank you,
regardless,
Dad.
Regardless, it's something, you know, categorically, mm-hmm. just categorically, keep your clothes on.
Don't think it's not happening in the women's locker room either.
What? What's that?
The people are walking around naked and strutting their stuff. What are you doing?
Well.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Well, think about going. Does the Arrington Hotel still exist? Think about going into the lobby of the Arrington Hotel in Evanston. And getting whacked in the face when you come through the revolving door. Yeah. Hello.
Can you get a lot of these off?
That's definitely when you're going to need to bring those idiot circles back to keep everybody 6 feet apart.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about the forthcoming lifting of the prohibition against toplessness for women in Evanston. So topless beaches, topless restaurants, topless Northwestern. By the way, speaking of Northwestern, of course, how did I forget this?
What?
Would Northwestern go along with this? Northwestern is sex toy university.
Oh,
Northwestern
that's
has
right.
students performing coitus on Sheridan Road. Of course they go along with it. Chris and Carrie.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I stumbled, it was 16 or 17 years old when I stumbled upon one in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Let me tell you, all those scenarios that played out in my head when I was that age went out the window. It was
Remember
the movie The Shining when the lady gets out of the bathtub? It was like, everyone looked like that.
Yeah. No Bo Derricks to be found, huh? All right. Chris in Elmwood Park.
Hi, Dan. Do you have any place I can go to look for who you recommend to vote for in Township?
And you can just ask me right here. Which races?
I'm in Maine Township for the Board of Review, 2nd District.
Pegorski.
9th
Even though Podgorski made a terrible decision in supporting Richard Irvin and a cowardly one, I would still say Podgorski for that that Cook County board seat.
Okay, and what about the Board of Review, 2nd District?
Refresh my recollection on the candidates.
I don't know. This is just what's on my list on my voting thing.
All right.
Board of Review.
All right. Hold on. I got to take a look. I don't remember offhand. But
catch us on the other side of the break.
I'll take a look at that. And I'll get you an answer in a second.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Big week for the high court from overturning a unconstitutional gun law in New York to overturning one of the worst decisions in Supreme Court history in Roe v. Wade, to now protecting not only the right of conscience enshrined in the First Amendment, but also overturning the silly Lemon test from a Supreme Court case, Lemon v. Kurtzman, from 50 years ago. No, actually 52 years ago. The Supreme Court has done it again. This is the case that we've talked about intermittently since Washington State football coach Joe Kennedy was fired from Bremerton High School in Washington State for praying privately after football games. Just to refresh your recollection, Kennedy would pray for 15 to 30 seconds on the 50-yard line at the end of football games to offer a silent or quiet prayer of thanksgiving for player safety, sportsmanship, and spirited competition. Initially, he prayed quietly and alone. After several games, some students took notice and joined him voluntarily.
And some students from other teams, from the opposing team, would join him voluntarily.
I mean, it's sort of like what you see at the NFL level.
Right,
players
exactly.
Get together.
They just don't put it on
TV. And coaches. Kennedy would offer short motivational speeches to players, ending with a brief prayer. Sometimes no players gathered and he prayed alone. He did this for 7 years without a complaint.
And then somebody complained.
Then they said, stop involving students. Then they said, stop doing it yourself. And when Kennedy refused, he was fired. Justice Gorsuch, writing for the majority, the Constitution neither mandates nor tolerates this kind of discrimination for engaging in a brief, quiet, personal religious observance. I won't shepherdize the Lemon v. Kurtzman case, but we could certainly go over it in pertinent part if you want. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Remember, why is this important if you're not religious? Well, it's important if you're not. I think it should be obvious if you are. But if you're not, It's important because what are those rights enshrined in the Bill of Rights? They're restraints against government encroachment. And so those lines, you want to be as bright as they possibly can be, because we should by now have a pretty good understanding of the mindset of the government when it comes to encroaching in areas where they do not exercise particular power, where they do not have dominion. The High Court focused on two questions. Whether a public school employee who says a brief quiet prayer by himself while at school and visible to students is engaged in government speech that lacks any First Amendment protection, and whether assuming such religious expression is private and protected, the Establishment Clause nevertheless compels public schools to prohibit it, and they found that it was protected speech, not government speech, that lacks First Amendment protection. Protected private speech, and there is no Establishment Clause violation here. So that also goes for other government school employees or government employees generally who want to have a private reflective moment in exercise of their conscience. And to know, because Coach Joe Kennedy stood up, that you can do that. And if some ill-informed colleague suggests that this is some sort of establishment of a state religion, you know that's not the case. You know that you're well within your bounds because the Supreme Court has so decreed. Joe Kennedy wrote, "I suppose fighting is just a part of who I am. I grew up on the streets and seemed to always find a way into a fight somewhere. Thankfully, the Marine Corps allowed me to fight for something that truly mattered, our freedom. Every American deserves someone to fight for them, for their freedom, and I was proud to do so. When I got out of the Corps, I hoped I would find a new team to fight alongside. I didn't know that would be as a high school football coach. In high school, I was too small to play football. And there were plenty of other coaches far more qualified to chart the X's and O's than me, but I quickly learned to love my guys, the players I was honored to coach. Some of them reminded me of myself, angry at the world, hungry for a meal, needing a safe place to sleep that night, and perhaps a new pair of shoes without holes in them. When they got in trouble at home, school, or even with the law, I could relate. Someone needed to fight for them, too. Not everyone has agreed with my fight in this case. That's okay. The American ideal of freedom is strong enough for us to disagree and still love each other as Americans. But we should all agree that no one should be fired from their job just because someone can be seen engaged in a private prayer. Fights leave scars, too. As a boxer and mixed martial arts fighter, my nose took a beating from bouts in the ring and octagon. The pain in this case came from the scars it has left on those closest to me. My wife and kids have taken the brunt of it. When my case started, my kids were still attending the school where I coached, and my wife was the school district's director of human resources. It hurt all of us to go through this, but we did it together. My players, too, felt the pain. For some of them, it meant they had no one to stand beside them on their senior night after the district banned me from the field. Why didn't I give up the fight? There's no way that I could. I pushed my guys on the field to never stop fighting until the whistle blew, to always give it everything they had until the last down. I simply could not give up my fight to compromise the commitment I made to God and keep their respect on the field. I had to keep fighting. In every fight, someone loses. Too many times in the last 7 years, I've had one question haunt me. What if I lose? Not only would that mean I would never be back on the football field, but it meant that my case might mean other coaches and teachers could lose their job. Worse, a small part of the Constitution I swore to defend in the Marine Corps would be weakened, not because of a fight I lost on the battlefield, but in a courtroom. Thankfully, though, this fight is won. I hope it means that our public school teachers and coaches don't have to hide their faith from view. For my part, I can't wait to get back to the field to be with my guys, pushing them to be the best players they can be, to give everything they have for every second of every game. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's not going to get the fanfare or attention of the Dobbs case, obviously. But it's an important case. because not only because you have a constitutional right that's at stake here, because it also speaks to sort of what kind of society we want to be. And minders that are not authorized, not sanctioned by any government to lord over us, but feel empowered to do so because of the culture. This is where you start to take your society back and return it to being a freer one with cases like Joe Kennedy. And people like Joe Kennedy are stepping up to say, no, I'll go through this.
Can he get his job back at the school?
I think he's going to get his job back. Yeah, I think he's going to get his job back.
Good. Well, he should.
If he wants it. Or they can, I don't know. Come to some sort of separation agreement. But the United States Supreme Court just ruled that they fired him illegitimately. So he's in a pretty strong position, I'd suggest. But it's bigger than that. Trying to silence speech you don't like. That's what this really is. And you do it under the auspices of the separation clause. I mean, we see this all the time. The left bastardizing the law to silence political opponents. And that's what the school district tried to do in this case. Make no mistake about it. And the Supreme Court said no.
But it's just weird because we've been, you know, when we would play East St. Louis in football, they would all meet in the 50-yard line and say a prayer after the game. And their coach would say, look at this facility here, and this is a wonderful place, and we are so grateful to you, God, for being here. Because I remember listening to his prayer, just watching, and I thought, that's fine. And nobody complained back then, but now everybody complains about everything. Everyone's a victim.
Well, again here.
And I hope the whole world, all of every American, heard about the Supreme Court ruling.
The matter here is this separation of church and state that people run around making false claims under, and that's not the language in the First Amendment, in the Establishment Clause, establishing a national religion, which means you are not compelled to expunge any expression of religiosity from the public square, quite the contrary. And again, this has been made clearer thanks to this conservative originalist majority on the court by formally discarding the Lemon test from Lemon v. Kurtzman, which was effectively discarded a while ago. Sandra on the highway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I tried looking yesterday, but what was the decision on it? Was that 6-3?
6-3.
And Kagan and Sotomayor, I think they're communists. They're always like voting against common sense things. Do they even understand? I don't understand like even their dissent. I don't know if you read it. If I have time this week, I'd like to read it, but I don't understand these women who vote like this. It's like communism.
But thanks for the call, Sandra. Yeah, I mean,
do they have religion or God in their life? I don't know.
This was Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor. Remember Breyer still voting on some of these matters because he heard oral arguments. So this is not the newly minted Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson quite yet. Ketanji Jackson Brown.
Ketanji.
KBJ, KBJ, right? Yeah, KBJ.
Not to be confused with
ACB.
New press secretary? What's her
name? Oh, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah, KJP.
Right, and not to be confused with ACB, Amy Coney Barrett.
Or AOC.
Or RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Or DAN. Got it?
A lot here. Anyway, all right, I think after that we should take a break.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, top of the morning, 6:38. Polls have been open for just under 40 minutes. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Tell us what's going on or what went on at your polling place if you've already voted.
Long lines.
Make an argument for a particular candidate, a particular race that is important to you. James in Tampa, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan. It's Gene, not James. But I listen to you guys down there every morning. I'm back up in the city now, and it's like I report back to Tampa to the other police officers I work with. But I am in shock with you guys. I mean, is this a third world country? Third world city?
It has become under the leadership or lack of leadership with Mayor Lightfoot.
Well, how do you mean?
Oh my God! I come back up here. Well, last night I turned on the news. They're jumping on buses in Sheffield and Belmont again, and then at the end of it, they say no arrest.
Yeah, okay.
Then I see our wonderful superintendent at a news conference saying, you know what? We're doing a great job.
Every time you go to that, they'll end with a positive. Like, well, statistically.
And then the last thing that got me going was we got the mayor of Chicago standing on stage saying, F you to a Supreme Court justice leading the crowd. I mean, this is like another world right now up here. I can't believe it.
And then we had 47 shot, 5 killed, a 4-year-old, and a 5-month-old baby girl who was 4 days away from turning 6 months old and barely even talked about it, barely even got mentioned.
Yeah, Gene, when you report back to Tampa, tell them to stay put.
Oh, my God. You know, it's so sad because all of us grew up here, Dan.
I know.
We all grew up here. Mm-hmm. We love the city. And just to see what's – I mean, it's unbelievable. It's really heartbreaking. But thanks for listening to you guys and – I listen to you down there having coffee in the morning, so have a good day, if you can, up here.
Thanks, Gene.
Yeah, thanks, Gene, and call in anytime.
Greg, Downers Grove.
Hi, good morning, Dan and Amy. So the Downers Grove polling location, we got there probably about 10 minutes after 6, and we were the number 3 and 4. There was basically nobody there. But what was interesting was the election judges were all arguing between themselves on how to process the ballots.
Oh boy.
Seems like they either didn't have the training or they didn't remember what the training was, to the point where they were only processing one person at a time through the polling location. So it'll be interesting to see today just how backed up it gets with the judges.
When you say processing, what do you mean, processing the ballot in the machine or like processing people to get their ballots to vote?
Oh, processing just to get the ballot to vote.
Oh.
They were at odds on how to go through that process, what needed to be signed, and basically they were arguing between themselves.
Did you vote electronically or did you get a paper ballot?
This was a paper ballot. They print it out and hand it to you once they go through your signature.
Please tell me no one asked for an ID because then this place will be up for grabs.
Oh, Dan. No, they.
Oh, good.
No ID.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Yeah, we don't want to have that issue.
No. Heavens, no.
You need one to eat at a restaurant with your vaccination card in Chicago.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Appreciate
it. No ID for voting. I still bring mine, though, and I present it, and they always tell me, you don't need that.
Put that away. That has no place here.
Put that away.
They'd be less offended if you brought a gun into the polling place. Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, nobody gets a vote for me till November. Hey, you're in good company, Dan. I got cobwebs on my hat.
Do you?
This morning, and I have cobwebs in my brain.
I have.
That's why I take Prevagen. It's made with jellyfish. Yeah. You guys have a good day.
You too, Chuck. Good luck cleaning out those cobwebs, both the physical and mental. The closing arguments being made. Let's start with the governor's race because it's, I don't know, mildly entertaining.
Well, they found Richard Irvin because he's been in hiding, and he showed
not
up.
Really.
Popped up in Peoria.
No, he hasn't been in hiding in the last week or 10 days. All of a sudden, he's renewed his love affair with the media once it became clear that he was dropping like a stone in the polls, and he was trying to get some earned media because the checks stopped coming from Ken Griffin.
Okay, well, here he is.
For a Republican to win in Illinois, a governor, you need Republican votes, you need independent votes, and you need Democratic crossover. I'm the only person that's going to be able to do that.
I've never heard that before.
And you know who agrees with him? None other than your leader of the 30 Pieces of Silver caucus in the House, super minority leader Jim Durkin, recorded this message. And I want to make sure you play it because I want everybody to remember who's tied to the hip after tonight.
Jim Durkin, House Republican leader, western suburbs of Cook County. I'm here with Richard Irvin today because I have great confidence in him as a human being, but also as a elected official. I've known him for over 20 years, and he has one of the most compelling stories of anybody I've ever met in public service. I'm supporting Richard for a number of reasons, but most importantly, he is the only Republican who can beat J.B. Pritzker in November.
That's all they have.
I've never heard that before.
It's so much fun. I mean, it's just so much fun. This is a repudiation, not just of Richard Irvin, but who is backing Richard Irvin when he probably finishes third tonight. So just important to remember who the names are because they need to be turned out, sent away. With Richard Irvin, who's just their avatar du jour. They need to be sent away, too. Leadership in the House and the Senate needs to change. Leadership in the party needs to change. And you have that opportunity with Darren Bailey as the nominee, particularly if Darren Bailey is successful in beating Pritzker. And there is an opportunity to win a race that I wouldn't have said there would be an opportunity for a year and a half ago, regardless of the candidate. Regardless of the candidate. And I will repeat, just as often as they're repeating, the specious data-free argument of, I'm the best. I'm the only one who could be Pritzker. No, I'm the only one who could be Pritzker. No, I'm the only one. Here's the reality. They're similarly situated. Pritzker is the favorite, as he always was, as he is going to be. But in this environment, because Biden is upside down in Illinois, you have a single-digit race, which means there's an opportunity. But you're going to have to run a tight ship. It's going to have to be a very good campaign to beat him. And it was always going to have to be that way, regardless of who the nominee was. So for those desperate candidates running around with that standard issue, 11th hour talking point, it's just not true. Pick whoever you want. Vote for whoever you want. Participate. It's just not true. And by the way, I say again, got to be as repetitive as they are, not one of them has provided any substantive data to back up that claim. However, I actually did a general election survey. So that's why I know what I'm talking about. It's not my intuition. It's not my hope. It's right. What the numbers are.
And numbers don't lie.
Numbers can, but I'm giving you a snapshot of where the race is today. And that's all a survey can do. And what the path is if you want to beat Pritzker. And for those candidates and their supporters who are unsuccessful tonight, you have to decide what you want to do. If you want to be like these combine dim bulbs, the Jim Durkins of the world, and sit on your hands or bitch and moan privately or even be the Quisling that you are and work for the other side. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, but what are they going to...
Can I finish my point? Then go ahead. It's a coalition of the willing. So you want to be part of a revolt against this feckless, corrupt, cowardly ruling class? Then you can participate in trying to take out J.B. Pritzker. If you don't, then you don't. Your choice.
Yeah, Irvin is going to lose, so then it's Durkin going to get behind the Republican nominee.
Don't care.
That whole group?
Don't care.
Well, if Irvin's a real Republican, he should care about the betterment of the party and do it.
That's exact. That's their choice.
Well, it's,
and that's the attitude that you should take. We don't have time and don't have the interest, frankly, for people who have been enemies inside the perimeter to, you know, change their hearts and minds, to imbue them with courage they don't possess, with intellect that is absent, with consideration for their own performance and self-accountability. We don't have time for it. You know how many votes Durkin controls? One. Same thing with all these other fungible state reps. They're irrelevant. To the extent they want to participate, they become relevant. To the extent they don't, they're irrelevant. And oh, by the way, now they don't have the check writer that makes them relevant.
Yeah, because he's gone.
So now what do you do? Real conundrum for them. That's their problem.
I like these callers on the line. 312-642-5600.
Anna in Skokie.
Hi, I just wanted to call in because I felt like this was a good moment to do so. This is actually the first time in my life I'm voting in our gubernatorial primary, let alone pulling a Republican ballot. And I just felt it's so necessary this time. I never felt like I had skin in the game before because as a mom, I'm just focused on like raising my kids, keeping to my community. But I felt like this is such an interesting race because you have a candidate for me personally that I see that is standing up for children and parents and like spearheading these efforts against indoctrination in schools and CRT and all this craziness that we're experiencing in my district with my children and my community. So this is the first time I'm voting in a Republican primary. And I am voting for Jesse Sullivan for governor because I feel like he has our back. He's a parent. He gets it. And I feel like he's going to win.
Okay.
Well, and thanks for coming over. You joined almost a million other new party members, according to a new poll nationwide, that are now voting Republican.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, this is an important point. The million that moved from left to right nationally. It's also something in the context of this governor's race. People change their minds. Don't get so poll obsessed. I mean, I look at this as a, you know, political consultant hack and stuff. And you need to measure what you're doing. That's important. And that's what polling does. Gives you a sense of how you're doing, what you're doing and so forth. But think of the last 6 weeks. When Richard Irvin had the run of the place, he was up 12 points, and his fave-on-faves are running 2-1. 6 weeks later,
a whole different story.
He's upside down. He went from May 1st. I mean, these are basically the numbers from my polling. He went from May 1st, like plus 23 fave-on-fave, to June 1st, minus 5. He went from up 7 to down 7. To then down, as we stand here, as of Wednesday, down 22. So
quick, big and a quick fall.
The point is to say people want to hear the arguments from all sides. And if only one side's making an argument, then, okay, well, then they're going to pay attention to that argument. Say, oh, well, that's interesting. I guess I could be supportive of him. And if nobody else makes an argument, then that person making the argument is likely to win. Not that he really made an argument, but presenting himself. But then all of a sudden, somebody else comes along and says, well, did you know all of this other stuff? And then people's minds change. So this idea that people are locked in, regardless of the evidence you present or regardless of the quality of the arguments you make, it's true for some, but there is enough of a percentage of the electorate that, as I say, a race that's single digits in a general election is winnable. It's very winnable, even with, you know, J.B. Pritzker having 100% hard name ID, people having an opinion of him. Their opinion of him is very one-sided because he's the only one that's really been making an argument for the past 3 years, aided and abetted by the Chicago and Springfield press corps. Well, that's about to change. Kenneth in Hyde Park.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I wanted to talk about my voting experience, but first I wanted to just appreciate Amy for your great questions during the AM 560 debate. I thought that the questions, especially to the candidates, like to Jesse, it seems like he dropped out of the sky. It was so fun. I giggled. Like, I literally giggled. So thank you for that. And so yesterday I voted, and they did not care about me getting an ID or anything like that. And what they did care about, though, is because I wanted to take a picture of my ballot. And they were like, oh, you cannot have cameras in here. You cannot take photos.
Right.
Did you take a photo? And I was like, I'm not answering that question.
Right.
I'm just like, please proceed. Did you take a photo? Oh, please proceed. How do you care more if I took a photo than if I'm actually a person that should be voting? I don't understand your standard. So that was just a really weird deal for me, like what they care about and what they don't care about.
Oh, that's a good point. Thanks for the call, Kenneth. I mean, you're not allowed to take photos, take photo of the ballot.
You're not? Why not?
Technically.
Oh.
I mean, I get, you know, it's in the whole secrecy of the ballot sort of protocol. But I mean,
people receive sample ballots, so I didn't see a problem.
Well, a sample ballot is not an actual ballot. I'm talking about your actual ballot in a polling place. You receive a sample ballot with a recommendation of who to vote for, a list of who's on the ballot. It's not the same thing as your actual ballot in the polling place. You're voting. But, you know, under the whole election integrity rubric. But regardless, Kenneth's point is a fair one, though. I like that way he thinks about it, which is, you know, they care so much about, you know, me taking a picture of who I'm voting for, and they don't care about whether I should be voting in the first place. It's a fair point about the laws that govern. Rich, North Side. Hey, Rich.
Rich. Yeah, here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just came from the 40th precinct, the second ward. The doors were locked to get in. No setups. Nobody took IDs. Nobody was wearing IDs. No training. And it's a mess. It took me half an hour to cast my ballot.
Wow.
I was the first person there.
Oh, boy, better get on the horn with Brian Hopkins to have him work that out, huh?
Brian Hopkins is not my man.
Not your man, yeah. But he is your alderman.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, you don't sound excited about it. All right, thanks for the call, Rich. John in Lincolnwood.
Oh, good morning, Dan and Amy. I was in Niles, 56th precinct, and it was actually nobody there, and it was very professional, very smooth, and only thing that I found strange is the girl, when I came in, asked me for my ID. And I'm like, she wanted to scan it. And I'm like, ID for what? I mean, what do you want? A voter ID? A driver's license? She goes, oh, no, don't worry about it. Just give me your address.
Yeah.
She made
it was a Freudian slip on her part. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but there was a first time I've ever seen it. There was a little scanner and it says ID here.
Huh.
Oh, really?
Like, was it your...
Yeah, that's why I'm calling, because I'm like, I've never seen
registration card, or did they want your driver's license? That's...
She wouldn't answer
either way,
me.
You don't need to present either.
I always bring my...
Don't worry. We'll call... John, you don't have to. We'll call Kim Fox, and we'll have her arrested and all of that equipment seized. Yeah, so that that doesn't
wonderful.
Happen again. Yeah.
Oh, really quick question, Dan. Who was I supposed to... For the senator? Who was the one that I should have voted for? I didn't... I saw all these choices, and it was a Republican ballot. I'm like, oh, my God, I have no idea.
Who did you vote for?
Oh, who was it? Salvi?
Oh, your
name recognition.
Italian-American bias. Is that right, John?
No. No. I just didn't know. I was like, I
understand.
I think Dan will kill me. I think Dan's going to kill me.
No. That's fine. Thanks for the call, John. I mean, I've said before, I like Kathy Salvi, and I like the family. I like Matt Dubiel.
I love Matt Dubiel.
And Matt Dubiel's, you know, he's fiery, and I like
him.
Well,
he's a parent who's decided to get involved, and I respect that.
And he's a radio guy, so that's my radio guy bias. So, you know.
Got a text message. Voter turnout very slow. Our first voter just arrived. That's at a precinct in the northwest suburbs.
Could be their only voter, depending on which suburb. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Went to Darren Bailey's rally yesterday in Des Plaines. Great speech, great presentation. You know, Patty Murray, I don't know if you remember her, Senator Patty Murray.
Oh, yeah, mom on a mission.
Well, she was a soccer mom in tennis shoes.
Yeah, right.
Sure. Oh, she's on mission.
You know, because, I mean, Darren's talking about how, you know, he's a downstate farmer. He's only been there for, I was surprised, I thought he was there a little longer, only since 2018. He was a state rep, and then he ran for state senate. And, you know, he's been fighting the good fight for us. So, I mean, he's got a, you know, these types of, you know, people with different backgrounds can get elected. So it's happened many times in American politics. So to dismiss him, as some people are, because he's from downstate is, you know, completely erroneous. He can definitively beat Pritzker with the right campaign. You know, polls are like balance sheets. They're snapshots in time. And the campaigns are like income statements. They're how you do. If he runs the right campaign and if Pritzker slips, and, you know, he could definitely win, even in this state. This is like Steve Cortez said yesterday. This is a, I forget how he said it, but an allegedly or something like that blue state, or an apparently blue state.
Yeah.
This state can turn. So anyway, I want to get your thoughts, too, on DeVore Chestokas. I still haven't voted. I'm doing it later. I thought I saw DeVore had the better poll numbers, so I'm open to either. But
Thanks for the call, Frank. Well, from what I've seen, yeah, DeVore, I think DeVore has a slight lead. That's a tough call between the two.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. I guess we'll continue on with our election day discussion because we've got a lot of people that want to talk about today's choices and the implications of said choices. But first, I want to know why Amy Jacobson carries Cholula in her purse.
What's wrong with that?
It's just weird. Why do you have hot sauce in your purse?
I have everything.
I mean, I'm
in
glad
my purse.
You do because I want it for my breakfast sandwich, but it's just odd, isn't it?
If I was on Let's Make a Deal, I have everything in my purse and I would win.
Is that a thing on Let's Make a Deal?
Yeah, like, you know, remember that show?
I know the show, yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you have a paperclip in your purse? Do you have an EpiPen in your purse? I have everything you need.
Why hot sauce? EpiPen is a life-saving device.
Well, this clears the sinuses. You just never know. You can throw this on everything.
Sure.
Salads.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
It works.
I was just curious. I don't know if that was like a regular thing. Most women carry hot sauce in their purse just in case.
And also, too, if you're any voter irregularities, yeah. Any problems at the polls, are your polls even open? We definitely want to hear from you. 312-642-5600. What's your voting experience?
Your polls open.
Like?
They should have been open an hour and 11 minutes ago. But here's the thing.
It's Chicago.
That's true. What is this I hear about? Because I've heard from other people now. We had a caller on it. And we've got some texts. There are devices at the polling places to scan driver's licenses or IDs. We may have to suspend this election. We may have to cancel this election and discard all the results. That's ruining our democracy, as I understand it. If you ask for ID, that destroys our democracy. I don't know what's going on in Chicagoland. We don't need to know who's voting because we have established a culture of trust in Chicago and Cook County. Because everyone knows that these are free and fair elections that are above board, right? IDs? What is going on? Where's a Kim Fox when you need her? Neil on the Northwest Side. Hey, Neil.
Hi, you there?
Yep.
Gotcha. So Edgebrook on the Northwest Side, the 9th precinct, they have no judge. So what was disseminated as our polling place is not our polling place. So we have to go to one of the early voting places.
Oh, that's fun. It's sort of like an adventure. right?
Yeah.
More time to park.
Yeah.
Hope you're good at parallel parking.
You don't have a job or anything you have to get to, I assume. So just, you know, you just make a day of it.
You know, it's not voter suppression or anything. It's not, you know, it has nothing to do with not having a judge on the northwest side, but, you know.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's interesting. Thanks for the call, Neil. You know, it should be done, too. I mean, you should be able to just vote. Like, it should be like Fandango. I mean, just vote, right? Like, just vote ahead of time and then.
Well, we've had, what, voting for 45 days now? When did early voting begin? 30 days.
It's not enough time.
I mean, honestly, the longer you have something, the more vulnerable it becomes. But don't worry.
We should start voting before the filing deadlines, before we know who the candidates are, just to be on the safe side.
I think we should start after tomorrow morning. We should start voting for the general election. It's only fair.
Yeah. No, I mean, let's get
out of an abundance of caution. You know, we want to make sure because of the COVID lingering. And we still have an executive order that Pritzker signed. We're still under an emergency order, by the way, just in case you were wondering.
Jan Hoffman Estates.
Hello.
Hi.
Listen, I wanted to my neighbor with, and she's afraid to declare herself. Secondly, she said, I don't know who to vote for. And I've been going on the internet trying to see, you know, where's a conservative Republican ballot anywhere, and I can't get any information. So is there any way we can go to find out who we should vote for?
Well, I mean, it depends. What I mean, I can give you my recommendations.
19th Precinct, Hoffman Estates.
Well, okay, but what offices are you interested in learning about?
Well, I'm going to vote for that Salvi for the
Senate
Duckworth replacement,
right?
And Bailey only because I think I would rather get Rabin, but Rabin or whatever. But I don't think he'll be able to win in the general. I mean, I don't think he'll get through. You know,
right,
so I
right.
figured downstate people are voting for Bailey. So you know, I mean, we could win 98 counties and still lose the governorship. So. But I don't know if there's any judges or any. I told her I'm going to go and check it out, but we can't get a sample ballot.
Well, you've got a Supreme Court judge. You got a Supreme Court race to vote in. Novarini and Shanes are two candidates to take a look at, I would
say.
Well,
Novarini's the one we have to keep in there. Novarini, I know. Well, I didn't think he was in our county there. I thought it was Kane and. Some of the other counties.
Right. He probably doesn't go up into Northwest Bruce.
Yeah, I didn't have that on my ballot.
That's right. So you got AG, you got Secretary of State.
Dan
Those
Brady.
Are competitive. You've got a congressional
now,
race.
No, who for Secretary of State?
Because, Dan Brady.
I know I'm not.
Yeah,
Dan,
I think.
Dan Brady?
Oh, Dan Brady, yeah.
Brady
I'm opposed to the Irvin ticket. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'd just like to encourage all these people to go out and vote anyway. I know they're afraid now of declaring themselves. I never heard of them. This lady, my neighbor's 86 years old. She goes, I'm afraid to declare myself. Like, what are you worried about? I mean, but anyway, how many signatures do we need to get an open ballot, you know, for primaries in Illinois? How many signatures would we have to get?
People are complaining about that. And when I voted on Saturday, one guy was yelling at an election judge.
Because
he wanted to vote for a certain candidate who's running as Republican.
It's a tall order.
I mean,
order.
I think that we should get some of these senior people that, you know, are not doing anything to go out and start getting signatures and get it on the ballot so we can get some real, you know, truth and honesty and voting for who you want to and not declaring yourself, because I mean, how can people be afraid of declaring who they are? You know.
Well, thanks.
I mean, it's ridiculous that you have to declare anyway. I mean, it's supposed to be your own privacy, but you know.
Well, why are people afraid? I wonder. Why are people afraid?
Because they're afraid if they vote Republican, they're going to lose their job.
That they're going to start. Well, no, she's not. She's retired. She's 86 years old.
I'm saying other people.
Well, why is she afraid? Why is your 86-year-old neighbor afraid?
He starts hearing all this stuff where they're coming after people and they know who you are and where you voted and everything, because they do know how you vote, you know.
Yeah.
And you can look and see if you voted Democrat,
right?
Which is, I don't think is really right, you know. And then when they do this gerrymandering and start drawing lines, they kind of know, you know, who they can get. I know Raja is our representative.
Yeah.
And, I don't know who's running against him, but anybody that runs against him is going to be voted for me. So I just, because we don't have any representation. I mean, it's like, who do we call? We here. If our rights are being, you know, compromised as a citizen, who are we going to call? Like, you know, one of our senators, we're going to call Dick Turbin. Are we going to call this state's attorney? What is it? Raul, whatever his name is.
Oh, Kwame Raul, the Attorney General. Yeah,
Kwame.
Right.
Yeah. Is he gonna file a discrimination lawsuit because we're losing our rights under our Constitution? I doubt it.
Yeah,
they dismiss all these cases. So
thanks for
get out and vote. Just tell everyone to get out and vote. You know, and
thanks.
If there's anything interesting, I'll call back. All right.
Thanks for the call, Jan. Appreciate it. Yeah, it is kind of interesting on the not forcing people to declare. I mean, it's just in closed primaries. You know, you want declaration because you're speaking, the candidates focus in on the universe, so you make sure you've got Republicans nominating Republicans, although there have been attempts to do otherwise, including in this race, the governor's race. And but I mean, there's a point to be made there. But I think that the people afraid to declare themselves, I think that speaks to a certain political culture, too. And maybe if that's the political culture, now is an opportune time to revolt. What do you have to lose? Michael Southside.
Good morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. If Darren Bailey wins as expected, I wonder how the media will treat Stephanie Trussell, the black woman who's his running mate. Are they going to play up a pioneer angle for her, or are they going to do a hatchet piece on her?
Oh, pioneer! They'll treat her about the same way you're seeing Clarence Thomas be treated right now, with the left using the N-word to describe him all over social media.
That's awful.
That's how they'll treat Stephanie Trussell. Well, yeah, but to the extent they have to, thanks for the call, Mike. To the extent they have to acknowledge her, to the extent that she's in TV ads for Bailey and so on and so forth, she'll be dismissed in no uncertain terms by the left, because the radical left is so virulently racist. What else is an identitarian other than a racist? And they make it known to all the way they're treating Clarence Thomas right now because of his majority opinion in Dobbs. I mean, literally, go on social media. Canadian pollster I saw, and other examples on Twitter, calling him the N-word, house N-word, and so on and so forth. And nary a comment from all of the cultural mavens of the left. That's who they are. That should inform this discussion about race, about K-12 curricula in the general election. Tom in Crystal Lake.
Yes.
Hi, Tom.
So today I was going to vote, and they, as I signed my card, they tell me that the card signature doesn't match. And I said, well, my signature's probably changed in the last 25 or 30 years that I've lived here. And I says, why don't I just show you my ID? He says, no, just re-sign this card and use all your letters of your name, and we'll see if that works. So I re-signed it, and they allowed that to happen. So and then I voted.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. Well, it's a good thing they didn't ask for your ID.
Shh. Don't say that.
Yeah. I don't want to destroy our democracy.
I love that. I love during COVID that you had to show it with your vax card in order to eat and to go to restaurants. I mean, to go to movies and everything.
You know what kind of person asks for an ID to vote?
A racist.
Insurrectionist.
Somebody
that's trying to destroy our democracy.
Oh, my God. If I hear that one more time. That and equity. I can't. Oh, my God.
Michelle in Woodridge.
Morning, Dan and Amy. First of all, Amy, Cholula, my favorite hot sauce ever.
Thank you.
I like Cholula. I like Cholula. I just odd that she has it in a purse. I don't keep a bottle in my back pocket. So I was just
I might start. So
all right.
Thanks for the idea.
Frank's hot sauce is also good.
All right. Anyways, I'm still trying to figure out who to vote for, because I feel like I've done all my research. I've listened to all the debates, and the one thing that's bothering me the most is that Darren Bailey keeps getting accused of raising taxes 13 times, and I've never heard him explain that. He usually just kind of laughs it off or something. I don't know if I've missed something, but can you, because taxes are probably my number one issue, and I just want someone to explain to me, did he do that, and why?
Well, he on the Clay County School Board, where he served for 18 years, their property tax, I mean, as you understand in the school board, property tax levy is passed every year to, in part, fund the schools with the state supplementing what most school districts receive through the local property taxes. And so he voted for the levies that in some cases, and he said, I'm quoting Darren Bailey, many, many times it was like $5 a household. I think at one time at the maximum it was $19 a household in terms of the incremental increase. And, you know, you're talking about a rural school district and you're talking about a state that passes, as you'll hear from all school districts, state that routinely passes unfunded mandates down to the local school district. And then the local school districts are saddled with having to make decisions about how to comply with state law within the money that they can allocate to themselves through the property tax levy, combined with whatever they can anticipate from the state with respect to their student population. And so so that's the story. I mean, as a local school board member, it's not the same thing as proposing tax increases or increasing taxes to increase taxes to feather bed salaries and pensions. It's because you've got to make do at the local level with what the state imposes best you can, particularly in a rural school district where you're reliant on local property taxes, just the same way suburban school districts are.
Okay, I understand. I understand that. Now, let me ask you this. So when Darren Bailey campaigns, and all of them, that they're going to cut property taxes, how in the world can they cut property taxes? Because I know that my property taxes are over $14,000 a year.
Yeah.
And those, I feel like, are never going down.
The only way they can do it, and this is my proposal a decade ago. It's been other people's proposal that's been adopted. And all I did was look around at best practices like our neighbor to the east, Indiana. The only way you can do it is at the state level, hard cap it, like Indiana does. Hard cap residential at 1% of property value, commercial at 2%, farmland at 3%, and say it shall not increase until and unless you have a capital event, meaning you improve it or sell it. That's the way it is in Indiana. That's actually the way it is in California through Proposition. Florida has a version of this. The increments are a little bit higher, but that's the only way you can do it. So and Rabine's proposed this too, and I'm glad they both did. But that's the way, that's you putting a marker down. This is what we should do. Indiana has it, and they got schools and police and all those other units of government, too. We can do it. But then you got to change the composition of the General Assembly and get people whipped up about this idea in order to put pressure on them. But that's the way that would have to happen. So it's not like flipping a switch. It's not executive order. It would be a fight.
Right. I imagine because it's such a Democrat-dominated
yeah.
government, and yep. I would imagine that would be very hard.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks for
all
the
right. That helps. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Michelle.
Seems like helping one listener at a time.
That's what I do. One starfish at a time, because it matters to this one. Tear. Maddie, Orland Park.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I've been a judge for quite some time, and the little slot that you put your driver's license in, the judges will not ask you for it, but if you offer it, they put it in so the back can be read and your information comes up much more quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's not, this year in Cook County, we have all new machines. It's pretty technologically advanced. So we'll see what happens.
Maddie, when somebody does that though, do you say thank you for facilitating the process, but you're destroying our democracy by volunteering your ID?
No, I've always just played along,
oh, okay.
You know.
All right.
But in terms of candidates, David Shostokas for AG is the one that he has the prosecutorial background. He's a constitutional expert, written a book on the Constitution, the Declaration, and he really is an expert on election fraud, as is Bobby Payton. Bobby Payton was the quant that went out to Maricopa County and created the algorithm so that they could figure out how the dead were voting. So that
yeah.
is a process they're working on here in Illinois.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Maddie.
We had him on the show after he went out there, remember?
Yeah, I like David Shostokas, I will say that. I like him, and I think he's the real deal. I think he's a very good attorney, very good experience. And he's got a great tagline. I'm going to steal it for the general election if he's not in it. Make crime illegal again.
Oh, that.
It's really good. It's not as good as Illinois Isn't Broken, It's Fixed. But
Dan Prof came up with that.
Right,
one.
But it's pretty good. And that's a great one. So I'm going to steal that if he doesn't make it to the general. If he does make it to the general, every Republican should run on it. But anyway.
But Thomas DeVore, I mean, I love his fight. And he has helped so many people across the state, so many parents who were hopeless, and he gave them hope. And he was always there to listen. And anytime I'd give somebody his phone number, he'd actually pick up the call, talk to them, walk them through the process of, you know, trying to get fundamental rights back for our kids.
I agree about that, and that's why
he took on the fight, and a lot wouldn't.
And that's why he's in the lead, and that's part of the reason that Darren Bailey was a viable candidate, and ultimately, with some help, is going to be the nominee, is because they stood up when you were called to stand up when few others did, and so there is much to admire about that. But you know, DeVore specifically, there are some he's in a few legal entanglements that present challenges for a general election. I mean, I just got to be honest and say that I'm not coming down on one side or the other, but I'm just saying that these legal entanglements, and we asked him about one when he was on the show last week, they just present a target-rich environment for Kwame Raoul, who he'd be facing. Not saying they're not overcomable. I'm just saying it presents a target-rich environment. It would be a fight. So we'll see. I think the race is probably DeVore to lose going into today. So if he's the nominee, then that's how it's going to be. But I don't see the same issues, the same challenges with Shostokas as I do potentially with DeVore. Patrick in Cook County.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Good.
I'm just doing my normal working for the county as a secret observer.
Mm-hmm.
And
secret.
What are you observing?
Right?
How are you? Are you dressed up like the what's the census cowboy undercover?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
All right.
So what are you noticing?
What's going on?
I go around to all the different precincts, and I check in on all of the judges and make sure everyone's got all their equipment, make sure everything's working, and as normal, nothing works. But the other caller was right about the ID scanner. They kind of like play it sly, where they sort of say, you know, oh, well, it's there just to make it easy. I'm like, well, if you could do that, why couldn't you get everyone in there? And what's really strange about it is the ability to register to vote at the precinct.
Oh yeah, same day registration.
I mean, that is just wide open. And now all the signature verification is on the tablet. It's just not good.
Mm. Now, do you work for Cook County, or you're just like a concerned citizen who's moving around and looking at what's going on?
No, I just have done election judging so long.
Oh, okay.
That they don't look at the voter records, but
imagine that. Shocking.
They keep hiring me on because I'm one of the few people who knows how to fix all the equipment.
Okay.
And
all right.
Yeah, no, it's good though. I mean, I would say mostly.
And when you say fix, you mean like to make it work. You don't mean to like fix in the Cook County sense of that word.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, there is weird stuff though, you know.
Yeah.
As you know, mm-hmm. when
like
they
what?
If they never want, well, they never allow cheating in the primary. They're very good at stopping it in the primary.
Right. Focus
on when it gets to the general, it's like just wide open.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you want to ramp up your cheating. You want to make it count. So you want to focus when
you want
to
slow roll
election.
Into it.
Well, you don't want you. I mean, if it's your guy on your own party's ballot, you don't want your guy to not get in.
No. Of course. And since that's already wired up, then you just need to worry about the general election in case you have one of these pesky Republicans that threatens the order of things. No,
right.
I get it.
Or like a crossover person. They're just not interested in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
thanks for the call, Patrick. Appreciate it. Good luck out there.
I'm taking Peyton for some same day voter registration at Lakeview High School.
Why isn't he registered?
Well, because we're going to register today, Dan.
Well, why isn't he registered before?
We have a date plan. Because we didn't do it We were busy.
Yeah, you're out busy buying hot sauce rather than registering your kid to vote. Let's go priorities.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning,
out,
Dan and Amy, on this election day. We're sharing election day stories of Cook County, present and past, because that's what you do if you live in Chicago. Here's one from a Dennis friend of mine before we get to our friend Ted. That was his theme music, of course you know.
Yes, of course.
My son and I, of course, have the same first and last name, different middle initials. He right now lives in an adjacent district, but when he lived with us and voted, he inadvertently signed my voter card with his signature. Now both of our signatures are illegible, but completely differently illegible. Every time I now go and sign for my ballot, his signature comes up, and I've never been questioned. It's been going on for years now. Hmm. So, I mean, it just sort of speaks to that. That signature requirement, and maybe, you know, I mean, I don't want to destroy our democracy, but maybe a good example of one of the rationales for voter ID, in addition to the ease of purpose that we were hearing about from election judges like Maddie, Norland Park, and others. Just, you know, you put it on that scanner if you want to, you'd volunteer to, and it just makes it easier to get you identified, get you your ballot, and be on your merry way. But again, I don't want to destroy democracy or be accused of it. Oh, heavens, if the left, if the new Marxists would accuse me of destroying democracy, gosh, I just don't know if I could bear it. Ted Dabrowski, president, wirepoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. It's a beautiful election day.
Did you vote on this beautiful election day?
No, I will go vote right after this call. I wanted to, you know, get all the energy I could before I go.
Yeah, well, yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do we you're
going to have to fight through those pro-abort North Shore Herodians burning their bras in front of the polling place or something in lieu of the or in light of the Dobbs holding, I suspect.
I'm going to have to run in and run out, so.
What about just on the matter of election integrity? I mean, that's a policy issue. And I wonder how much you and the Wire Points crew have looked into this over the years, how Illinois administers its elections, since that's a state and local matter primarily.
Yeah, it's something we haven't delved into and haven't spent the time to go into like other groups have. But, you know, I always look at just the amount of corruption we have in Illinois overall. And it's pretty easy to think that we have a very flawed system, you know, whether it switches election results or not, I don't know, but I know that we're going to have that. And, you know, all you need to do is, and we talked about this the other day, is look at the unemployment insurance fraud that we have. When you can have so much fraud so easily, you know, in a system that in theory has checks and balances, then you can easily have fraud in voting. And when you talk about the examples you've been giving, it's easy. I had a chance to work on one campaign myself, and you know, had very limited money to support elections, and it was amazing. At you know, once you have a little bit of money, people come out of nowhere to help. I imagine Illinois is fraught with a lot of problems, but it's something we haven't delved into directly.
Right. What kind of role do you think Pritzker played in getting his preferred opponent to be elected today? Like how much money did he personally spend on attack ads for said candidate?
You know, I, you know, the numbers are huge, right? And I was just reading over all those numbers in the millions. I have no idea what Pritzker's done. Everybody knows, if you're out there, that Pritzker and the Democrats prefer a Bailey. That's what they said all along. They signaled it, and they pushed it. So it's no surprise. They think that they downplay a farmer. They downplay a guy with a southern accent. They downplay a guy who's from down there. But, we'll find out whether that's a mistake or not. But, that's just typical of how they treat people. They don't care about policy. They don't care about anything. They would rather just,
And
they sound like snobs.
And it's typical of how combine Quisling Republicans treat people, too, which is to, oh, well, if Pritzker says it, it must be true.
Well, yeah, well, not just Pritzker, but others as well, right? Even Republicans. And, that's not here to endorse Bailey or any of the other candidates. As Wire points, we're 501c3, so we don't do that. But, we do talk about their policies. And Bailey has been, a staunch opponent of a lot of the failed policies that Pritzker's brought along. He's been against all the executive orders, against the COVID response, against the CRT and sex ed agenda. I think he's been right on policy. Whether he can win the election or not, or whether he can first win the primary, we have to see. But certainly, a farmer with a southern accent's been right on the right side of policy.
I like what Chicago is doing, and with the help of their comm shop, the Chicago Press Corps, people like Greg Hines writing over at Crane Chicago Business, the anti-business magazine in Chicago. Fortune 500 CEOs, we know you can't come to Chicagoland, Chicago specifically, for the business environment. You come for the values. You come so you can stand on a stage with Lori Lightfoot and tell Clarence Thomas to go frack himself. That's why you come here. It's for our values.
Yeah, it's only way, one way to say it is pathetic. It's businesses are there to make money. They're to be in states that are growing, that are attracting people, that are vibrant, that manage their affairs well, that care about their credit ratings. Illinois is none of those. Illinois is going to an extreme. And I think, if there's any good news in what Illinois is doing, is that they're going so extreme, it's becoming obvious to anybody who's not extreme that it's going crazy. And the more extreme they become, even speaking about the abortion issue and Pritzker, calling a special session on that, is that they're just proving how far they will go.
Calling a special session, what is there left to do? What is there left to do in a special session on the Dobbs decision, overturning Roe v. Wade? What is there left to do? We have abortion on demand all 9 months, taxpayer fund. Are we going to go after kindergartners? Are we going to try and level it up to fourth grade?
No, there's a lot more to do, because you have to remember, if you look at the map of the states around us, they're putting more and more bans on abortion. And there's going to be tons of people coming here. They need lots more taxpayer money to support the thousands and tens of thousands that are going to come from.
Right.
And that's what they want. They want more people. They want regulations changed so they can have more workers.
Is that why we need to build a high speed rail, is to get people from other states in here to get their abortions and get out?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. It's going to be, they're going to the extreme, and I think there will be, there's a good chance, a good campaign run by anybody on the Republican side. There's so many failed policies right now, and it's so extreme on the Democratic side that there's a chance, and people don't think that the Republicans can do it, but it's all these things, we're on the extreme side in Illinois.
And people, they should not forget that RAs and nurses are allowed to perform abortions in the state of Illinois, and Pritzker is going to be offering scholarships to try and recruit abortionists to the state. But who's going to pay for all this? I mean, we're going to go from, 34,000 to 50,000 plus abortions a year? And where are we going to get the money? Why is this taxpayer-funded abortions? Even for people out of state.
Dan's point.
Why is it? Because they're ideologues. That's why. Yeah, right. And they're going to move that for the abortions.
Our tax base is going to go up. Yeah.
No, they're just going to do what these p-hats in corporate America are announcing they're going to do. We'll pay you up to $4,000 to take a trip to Chicago to get your abortion, then come back because it's better than maternity leave. Wonderful corporate America.
Yeah, it's it's just more the extreme.
So with respect to the letter-writing campaign to CEOs, one CEO who will not be returning the letter is Ken Griffin. So the impact of Citadel moving its corporate headquarters to Miami, I mean, you know, do you see the CME group going next? I mean, what do you see, if anything, the potential domino effect will be?
Well, you know, it's got to scare the big corporations who were nervous about being here. You know, CME and others have threatened for years. And, you know, it's the same thing with Caterpillar. They threatened for years. They were very clear about their unhappiness with the situation in Illinois. And they finally, you know, acted. You know, you get to a moment where there's a decision point that needs to be made, a new CEO or whatever it is, and they've left. And when you hear Caterpillar and when you hear, you know, Citadel, such a big move, these are very wealthy people, very influential people. And, you know, the whole tax base is moving out. And that means less growth in Illinois. That means the tax burden on those corporations who are remaining increases and the remaining people increases. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy of more companies needing to leave. You got to watch out for that vicious cycle, and I think we're in it.
Just real quick, I mean, I know, you know, we don't care about these things, but Governor Spaulding continues to run around talking about how he balanced the budget, and by the way, without that, before the federal money, which is another layer of comedy. But the Auditor General, the Illinois State Auditor General, seems to disagree with the governor.
Well, yeah, it's fascinating, and I like to see it when these reports come out like that. So the Auditor General just pointed out that we have been underpaying the last 5 years, last 4 years, by $4 billion a year to our pensions. Mm. So any claim of a balanced budget.
That should work out well.
It's just a lie. That's all it is. It's a lie, and we kid ourselves. They make it official. It's a balanced budget. But the reality is that Illinois are left in more debt. And, you know, and the governor gets to pretend like he's done something great.
It's an election year lie. That's what I call them.
Well, I think they're going to get called out on it. And look, you know, the pension crisis and the budget crisis, nobody talks about that right now. It's a non-issue, and that's because of the $200 billion that came into to bail out the state and federal money. But you know, as the stock market declines, as interest rates shoot up, and the recession, I guess the likelihood of a recession continues to increase. Watch out, because all those bad numbers that we used to talk about will be back.
Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, wirepoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Ted, thanks as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Have fun voting. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. A couple weeks ago, as we were tackling once again the carnage on the streets of Chicago, I suggested, you know, maybe rather than just focusing on the lack of prosecution of repeat violent offenders by Kim Fox, the fecklessness of the political power structure in Chicago, from the mayor's office to the chief judge's office to the Cook County State's Attorney's office to the sheriff's office to the leadership of the CPD under Superintendent Brown. Maybe we should hear more and just try and focus more on some of the victims and their families, to the extent their families are willing to speak. Maybe that will have more resonance. Maybe that will generate more attention, so we don't just look at these numbers coming on Monday after a weekend as just the, you know, like treat them like an index. Like we just treat people's deaths and or maimings as numbers.
Well, we did with this 5-month-old girl who was shot. I mean, it was just kind of mentioned and then moved on.
Well,
I mean, it wasn't as if they were out at midnight or what. They were out at 6 p.m. at night. It was still bright light outside. And some thug shot 4 shots through the back of the car, and it went through the trunk and killed the baby, a fatal shot to the head.
Well, another such family member of a victim is speaking out. Gianno Caldwell, I knew Gianno, I believe, when he was working for the treasurer's office. He was working out DuPage County way before he became a big shot. and a political analyst at Fox News. He's the host of a podcast, Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell, the sworn enemy of PC culture. One of those individuals killed this weekend, shooting death this weekend, was his 18-year-old brother, Christian, who was killed, innocent bystander, as I understand it from the reporting and from what Gianno had to say about it. Innocent bystander in Morgan Park. He was shot and killed over the weekend. And this is what Gianno has said about it in part.
Horrific. And I'm going to tell you, I would rather not be sitting here doing this interview with you. I really would rather be with my family, consoling them. But there is four men, black offenders, who jumped out of an SUV with dreads, who need to be captured and prosecuted.
Gianno Caldwell, a Fox News political analyst, speaking out about the life.
My baby boy. Every time I try to keep it together, I'm sorry. He was a comedian, kind of like his big brother me. He was fun to be around, just a loving kid, loved to travel.
And tragic death of his little brother, 18-year-old Christian, who Caldwell said he helped to raise.
He called me. I was kind of like his father. He never knew his father, so when it came to his needs, financial, clothes, whatever, I was the one who would provide that in addition to my grandmother.
We're pleased now to be joined by the aforesaid Gianno Caldwell. Gianno, thanks for joining us. Very sorry, of course, for your brothers, the loss of your brothers. Our condolences to you and your family.
It's so important for me to do shows like yours because you guys have an audience that is actually based in Chicago who may know something, who may have a tip, who may know what happened on Friday at 114 South Vincennes. They may know what happened that Friday night, or rather morning. They may have information that they can share with the police, or they can DM me on Instagram or Facebook at Gianno Caldwell and give us leads. So it was so important that while I'm here in Chicago, that I visit with the local affiliates, the local news stations, newspapers, and do interviews to drive individuals who may know something to tip in and hopefully and prayfully bring justice to my little baby brother, Christian.
Well, tell us what happened. Tell us what you know.
So what was said by the police and reported is on Friday morning, my younger brother was outside of a venue. He was outside of a venue on 114th Street when three to four men pulled up in a black SUV and they just began firing. Three people were hit in total. My little brother, a young lady, and another man. The young lady, she's okay. She got shot in the leg, but she's going to be fine. The guy that was there, he was shot, rushed into surgery, I believe still in critical condition. And my little brother never had the opportunity to be in critical condition. He was murdered on the scene.
Was this a case of mistaken identity, or do you think, what was this?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. The police say they don't know what it was either. So I wait for the facts and let the investigation proceed and then go from there. But what we do know is what the police has informed us. The reporting supports a lot of that. Not all the reporting has been accurate. There was 50 shell cases found at the scene. Ooh. So I have absolutely no idea how that happened. What I do know is my little brother didn't deserve to die. He didn't deserve to be murdered. He just turned 18 this year. We were talking about colleges. I was talking to him about flying him out to come spend time with me and visit with me for the summer. Those were the conversations we were having. So this is not, heartbroken doesn't describe how I feel or how my family feels. Shattered is more like it. And the fact that I'm actually on the phone with you guys versus being with my family says something, because we desperately need to know what happened. We desperately need to drive tips. We absolutely need justice for my baby brother, Christian.
In that clip that we played from an interview you gave where you talked about guys in dreads that got out of this car or shot from this car. Black SUV. So how do you know that and give us as much detail on that as you know?
Well, that's what the officers have said. That's what the reporting is saying. Now, any other information? I don't really have at this time. I've been reaching out to everyone I know, whether it be state elected officials, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, who has the Chicago Superintendent of Police within their membership, making sure that the Superintendent of Police views this as a priority and ensuring that there's justice for my baby brother. So those have been my focus in driving the media, certainly to cover the story, because if he wasn't connected to me, if he wasn't my baby brother, no one would know his name. And I know that to be the case because I saw a reporting from a local affiliate Friday night before I revealed that it was my brother, and it just says 18-year-old man shot and two others. That was it.
Yeah.
No one would even know his name.
Yeah. Well, I know. It's hard for this five-month-old girl to get any publicity,
it is.
Too.
And that's the point, and I've been mentioning that in the press. Yeah, absolutely. If she wasn't an infant, no one would care about that story.
She is an infant. I don't feel like sorry for interrupting, but she is an infant, and I feel like nobody's covering it. And I know there are other bigger, you know, announcements with the Roe v. Wade being overturned, but now we're just numb to this, so we don't even cover that. I mean,
it's become a culture of death in this city. That's why.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
We went to a balloon release yesterday for my baby brother to celebrate his life. I've never been to one of those things ever in my life. It was about family and other community members. It was about 60 of us. And I brought people together, and I said, well, I've never been to a balloon release before, and you should have saw the crowd. It was kind of like, what? You've never been to one? You know, it's the people expect this. A young man that was there, I talked to him because I made sure that I said hello to everyone. He said that he just came from the hospital. I said, for what? He said, my dad was shot. I said, what? I'm so sorry. And he was like, yeah, that's kind of how it is. And I'm like, wait a second. This is just such normal that you can go down the streets of Chicago and it's a death sentence on your life? You're just waiting for your number to be pulled?
Well, I don't know
some are shot twice.
I don't know if you remember just a few weeks ago that mass shooting outside the McDonald's on State in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, and one of the girls who was there, who was witness, told the local news, she's like, you know, I knew when it was happening, like, I needed to run because I've been here before. And she's like, I've been shot at and shot before. And so, yeah, as crazy as it sounds, this becomes part of your expectation of living in Chicago. And there's just no sadder commentary.
It is beyond sad. No American city should be in this set of circumstances. The soft on crime strategy that has been had by the leaders in this city must end. We have to unhandcuff the police. They need to be able to do their jobs without the fear of having people complain about them without an affidavit. Like some of these policies have kind of been pushed out where police say, you know what, hands up, I'm not even going to get involved. I'm not going to get involved. I'm just going to sit here for my 30, collect my pension, and just move on because it's not worth it anymore. No one wants to really do their job because, one, they know they're not supported by their leadership in general, and I'm talking about city leadership. I'm not naming anyone specific, but folks don't feel supported. Prosecutors have been demoralized. Everyone's been demoralized, the people who are supposed to bring justice to these kind of situations. And it continues to happen, and we continue to see the police handcuffed, and they're not able to really do much of anything. That needs to change.
Gianno, tell us, you mentioned in other interviews about how you were like a father figure to your brother, Christian. Tell us a little bit more about your family. I know a little bit about it, and it's an interesting story, and I just want to put as much of a human face on this as possible. So the background here.
So we grew up really poor on the south side of Chicago. Lights, gas, and water off at the same time. Mom addicted to drugs. So our mom gave temporary custody of me and my siblings to her mother so she can go to rehab. Now, during that process, when she would leave a rehab, go back, leave, go back, she was having more kids, and my grandmother would bring them into the family and adopt them. So I got three little brothers who never known who their father was. And as a teenager, I started working for the federal government part-time really early. I was 16 years old. I would take care of them. I would take them to museums. I would take them ice skating. I would buy them clothes. I was their big brother, but I was their dad, too, because they never had a father. They never really had a father figure outside of me. So that's the relationship in which we have. And this doesn't just feel like my little brother dying. It feels like my son being murdered. no one can imagine what that feels like. And as we continue to search for answers and pray for justice, I can't even grieve because I have to stand strong. I have to stand strong and be there for my baby brother and be an advocate for him. Be an advocate for him. Sorry about the background.
No, that's all right.
So, Gianno, in your heart of hearts, do you think that police will find who killed your little brother?
I pray and hope that they do, and I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. He was just murdered on Friday. I'm doing press on Saturday and Monday and Tuesday and trying to make sure that people know who he is, see his picture, know that he was a good kid. That's what I want people to know. I want people to call in and tip the police and tell them what they know. That's why it was so important to do your show today. That's why it's going to be so important to do GCI and Power 92, the urban stations, because someone knows something. Well, probably a lot of people know something, and we need them to tell. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are right now. I need justice for my baby brother, and my family needs to heal.
Gianno Caldwell, Fox News political analyst, host of the podcast Out Loud with Gianno Caldwell, the sworn enemy of PC culture. And obviously, as Gianno said, if you know anything about what happened on Friday night in Morgan Park where his brother Christian was murdered, please either contact Gianno directly on social media or contact the Chicago police. Gianno, thanks so much for joining us again. Sorry for the loss of your brother. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Oh, good. Hillary Clinton is back in the news.
Oh, maybe she'll run again in 2024.
I hope so. She was on with Gayle King on CBS this morning because she went to law school with Clarence Thomas. So
she knows everything, right?
She thinks she does, apparently. She thinks she knows Clarence Thomas. And so her assessment of Clarence Thomas in the light of his majority opinion in Dobbs was this.
Justice Thomas has sort of floated that out there about contraceptive rights and
yes.
contraception and about same-sex marriages. But other justices have pushed back to say, no, he's really sort of on his own with that.
Well,
don't believe that?
Well, he may be on his own, but he's signaling, as he often did. You know, I went to law school with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a person of grievance for as long as I've known him. Resentment, grievance, anger. And he has signaled in the past to lower courts, to state legislatures, find cases, pass laws, get them up. I may not win the first, the second, or the third time, but we're going to keep at it.
So you're saying people pay attention to
yes,
this?
Yes, the people he is speaking to, which are the, you know, right-wing, very conservative judges and justices and state legislatures. And the thing that there's so many things about it that are deeply distressing, but women are going to die, Gayle. Women will die.
There we go.
Just, you know, hyperbole. We're all going to die.
Yeah. How many women die?
It's like same with COVID, you're all going to die.
How many women die when there's 1.5 million abortions every year? Something though that she said, he is a grievance, person of grievance and angry. I don't know if you've read his autobiography, My Grandfather's Son. But if Clarence Thomas were to be a man of grievance in the way that Hillary Clinton means that term, then who would his grievance be with?
The world? I mean, what is she talking about?
His grievance would be ostensibly be the same as the grievances of the left. This is somebody, I mean, excuse me, he's 74 years old. He knows what Jim Crow was like. He knows what poverty in Georgia was like. He knows separate drinking fountains and institutional racism. So if he is a man of grievance, then why doesn't he have the same grievances as Hillary Clinton and all her identitarian friends? Yeah, in point of fact, that isn't Clarence Thomas at all. Not in how he considers himself in his autobiography, not in his work product over the last, just even take his time on the court, over the last 25 plus years. This is what the left does, though. They project onto their opponents who they actually are. And no one is more ready to do that than one Hillary Clinton. For another perspective, since Dobbs is brought up here, I thought this was important. Carol Swain, who would be now an ideological fellow traveler of Clarence Thomas, she didn't start out that way. Carol Swain is a professor emeritus, both Princeton and Vanderbilt. She's part of Bob Woodson's 1776 project. She writes about Dobbs. I'm among the more than 60 million women who terminated an unwanted pregnancy after the Roe v. Wade decision. It's a decision I quickly came to regret. Younger version of myself reasoned that if it were legal, it must be okay. After all, the purpose of government was to protect the general welfare of the people, so how naive was my reasoning? I'm a bit reflective today because I know firsthand the shame and guilt that often comes from abortion decisions that women make with incomplete and sometimes false information. When I had my abortion, I was in my early 20s and was already the mother of two children that were born during my teenage years and during a teen marriage. It was a secret I kept for more than 20 years. The abortion was one of those dark actions I stuffed deep inside myself and pretended didn't happen. It was only after my Christian conversion experience in the late 1990s I was able to gain emotional release. I shared my story with my children and friends before eventually sharing the decision with the world through my writings. And she goes on to say, after my abortion, I quickly became pregnant again as if to replace the life of the child I had killed. The pregnancy ended in miscarriage, which frequently happens after an abortion. I was never able to give birth again. And she just goes on to talk about her conversion and the importance of what the pro-life movement that she's a part of must do now. Carol Swain, again, Princeton, Vanderbilt. She's also a black woman, if you don't know who Carol Swain is, for all this talk about how black women are going to be disproportionately negatively impacted by the decisions made at the state level to restrict abortion. So just other voices that you're not going to hear except on shows like ours that you should hear because they're informed both experientially as well as intellectually, as well as voices that you're going to hear everywhere that are the opposite, like Hillary Clinton. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by Matthew Schmitz, founder and editor at Compact Magazine. Matthew, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, let me just start with Hillary because, I mean, I don't know, it's easy target, fun. Her characterization of Clarence Thomas and what's really going on here, and then, again, quick reversion to the mean of the talking points, women are going to die.
Yeah, well, the left has always really despised Clarence Thomas from the very beginning. They've called him the dumbest justice. They've now they're calling him someone who has grievances, and in addition to other insults that they've hurled at him. And I think this is a great moment for America. It's a great moment for the court. It's definitely a vindication for Clarence Thomas, who has long understood the wrongness of Roe v. Wade. And he is really restoring faith in our constitutional order, that we have courts that can responsibly say what the Constitution is. He has struck a blow against the idea that the right to abortion, the right to kill your own unborn child, is somehow enshrined in the founding document of our nation. That's what the left believes. It's what Clinton believes. And that's basically saying that America is founded on the right to kill the most vulnerable people in our society. And the Supreme Court last week said, no, that's a lie.
The reaction from the pro-abortion left in some quarters, I mean, the violence I'm talking about specifically, since the draft opinion of Dobbs was leaked to the release of the actual opinion on Friday, we had a man arrested for on an attempted murder charge against a police officer. in Los Angeles. You had St. Coleman Catholic Church was burned to the ground, suspected arson, in addition to crisis pregnancy centers being firebombed and many of the culprits being nice enough to leave very graphic messages at the offices of these crisis pregnancy centers. Yes. Or pro-life advocacy, pro-family advocacy groups to let them know.
If abortions aren't safe, they aren't either.
Right, just what they think of them.
Yeah, I mean, here in New York where I live, all around the streets, little posters have been stuck to, little stickers have been stuck to things that say, you know, every city, every town, burn the courthouse down. These are put up in response to Roe v. Wade. So there's the threat of violence. I attended the very, very large, you know, tens of thousands of people protesting the Dobbs decision in New York on Friday night. You know, I wanted to go see what was happening, and I wrote about that for Compact Magazine. And, you know, for all of this kind of expression, we've seen certainly less violence than in the George Floyd riots in the summer of 2020. That's very good. That probably has something to do with the fact that the people who are most pro-abortion in this country tend to be upper-class women. And though that demographic is not the demographic most likely to go into the streets and actually cause mass violence. So I think that's why we haven't seen anything like the George Floyd reaction yet. But we have seen, certainly, discrete acts of violence against pro-life centers, and also a broader justification of violence and an encouragement of violence on the left.
There's an encouragement, too, in rural, you know, to tackle churches in rural America. Did you see that?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, one thing to keep in mind with this is that the media plays a role. You're in the media, I'm in the media, so I don't say everyone in the media, but the liberal press plays a very large role in the incitement of violence of this type. You know, in Canada last year, we saw dozens of churches burned after the media pushed false reports about Indian children being secretly buried at these residential schools where Indians used to be educated on reservations. And so hundreds, you know, certainly dozens, and I think it may have been hundreds of churches were burned down because of these false reports spread by the media. And that's why there's a lot of dissatisfaction with our media today.
Get your perspective on the left and the left's general response, even if it's not violent, it is hysterical and unhinged in so many quarters. And as you said, sort of inciting and rationalizing in that vein. It seems to me this is the first loss that they have suffered in the last 50 years. You know, the back and forth of electoral politics is one thing. This is a religious cult, these new Marxists, that, you know, their politics is their religion. They are their gods. And one of their sacraments was just taken away. And frankly, the reaction, in addition to the underlying truth that they never made the sale to the American people on this issue, speaks to how weak their religion is. And that weakness, I think, leads to a feeling of vulnerability that leads to this hysterical reaction. They don't want you to know what a paper tiger they are.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I was very struck by when I went to kind of report on the abortion protests in New York on Friday night was all the signs people held up saying, you know, I have fewer rights than guns do, which isn't true. It's very easy to obtain an abortion here in New York. It is very, very difficult to get a license for a firearm. It takes at least 6 months. It requires spending more than $400. It's a very involved process. The Constitution guarantees a right to bear firearms, and if you read that document, there's nothing in there about abortion. But the more kind of fundamental thing I want to point out is, you know, we've seen a broader move to define certain political views as hateful, and what that means is that expressing certain views is going to become increasingly frowned upon by the authorities, by the law. The Attorney General of California, after the Supreme Court decision striking down some restrictions on gun ownership, issued a proposal saying that people who are guilty of hate or racism should be denied gun licenses. And their guilt for hate or racism could be determined by reviewing their social media accounts. Mm-hmm. Now, the point here is not that, you know, hate or racism is good, but who gets to make that determination? That's a political determination made by the left, and they're going to use those kinds of categories to deny rights to people who don't agree with their agenda. And basically, it'll mean that some people are going to have the rights to bear arms, they're going to have the rights to go into the streets, they're going to have the rights to say whatever they want, and then other Americans will be denied those rights because they're considered hateful racists.
And the point here is that they need to shout you down. And if they can't shout you down, meaning you won't stand down, then they will shut you up and they'll use whatever tools of force at their disposal to do so. That seems they understand they cannot win on the merits. Thus, they have to shout you down. Thus, they have to disengage. Thus, they have to try to marginalize and isolate you. And because they control these cultural institutions and so many communication channels, they can do that in a significant way. But once they start feeling vulnerable, then you see just the lengths they're willing to go to shut you down and shut you up.
Yes. And with the violence you mentioned and the threats of violence, if the government prosecutes very heavily any kind of law-breaking done by the right, say it's illegal to trespass into the Capitol building, and they hit people who've done that with very, very harsh penalties, but they let, say, people who have burned courthouses down or thrown Molotov cocktails into police cars and the George Floyd riots, say they let those people off with a slap on the wrist, that's creating a legal landscape where basically they're encouraging one kind of violence and they're encouraging the destruction of peace and order in our society. And so that they don't have to even explicitly directly punish the right. They can just sort of, you know, encourage kind of left-wing violence that is then wielded against normal people who are seeking law, order, and justice.
He is Matthew Schmitz, founder and editor at Compact Magazine. Matthew, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.